Dr. Copen, did you hear how much a beer was at Wrigley in 1970?
In 1970,
yeah,
it was a dime. Is that right?
50 cents. 50 cents. It was a Heilemann's or a Schlitz. You had your choice, and then a hot dog was 35 cents. So that's how it goes.
I wonder what a frosty malt was. That back in 1970, that was what I was eating.
Really?
At Wrigley.
Let me see here.
That was like the highlight after the seventh inning stretch. We would get the frosty malt. Oh, that was good.
Is that the same as a Borden's milk? No.
It was like good chocolate ice cream. You know, it hit the spot when you're 12 years old.
Oh.
The seventh inning of a ball game.
Yeah, Pete just looked it up. 25 cents for your Borden's frosty malt. There you go.
Okay. Oh, Borden's made it. Okay. That was 25 cents. That was great. That was great.
Can I get you to weigh in on the healthiness of the beer snake cup thing? The cups that the Wrigley fans put together at the Cubs games, or at least they did on Sunday. And they all put their beer cups together, and they create these little snakes. Dr. Copen, any health concerns there that we should know about?
I don't. There might be health concerns, but I think it goes far behind COVID-19. I saw the video that was posted online of the beer snake, and the Lord only knows what's on those cups. But those people sure look like they're having a good time, and I don't think we're going to have a super spreader event, but I don't know if it's something I myself would participate in. I might volunteer my empty beer cup, but let someone else touch this.
Well, you can't do that because you're chief medical officer of Northwestern Medicine Lake Forest Hospital, and that would look bad. So I get it. You couldn't do it. But, you know, I'm cheering them on for sure. And I might even participate, which is I just think we need it. And mentally, wow, how fun was that to watch? That is just
fantastic.
Awesome.
And also to see the Wrigley filled with fans on beautiful days, sweeping the Cardinals. I mean, what's better? I mean, it's good for the soul.
It totally is. Well said. Got to ask you about one of the top headlines today, which is the CDC, I believe it is, has changed the variant, the Delta variant, from one of concern or one of interest to one of concern. So they've sort of upgraded it in that way. Is that something we should be concerned with? How concerning is it, would you say?
Yeah, well, I think they're right. It certainly is a variant of concern, which means that this variant is spreading. We know in Britain, in the United Kingdom, where, as we recall, there was one of the variants that we've been talking about for months first arose. This Delta variant, which arose originally in India, has now taken the place of the homegrown variant in the United Kingdom. And now they're reporting 90% of the virus, of the COVID virus, that they're picking up in new infections in the United Kingdom is from this Delta variant. Now in the United States, the thinking is it's about 10%, the Delta variant, and we have every reason to believe that a similar phenomenon will occur in the United States, whereby the Delta variant will take the place of the variant that started in the United Kingdom, also here in the U.S. And this is important. This is important because based on the experience in India and now in the United Kingdom, we know that this Delta variant is more transmissible, depending on the report, anywhere from 40 to 60%. More transmissible, and there's some early data coming out of Scotland that people who get sick with this get sicker than people who had the variant that arose in the United Kingdom. So this is important. It really is a variant of concern. It's something we have to keep our eye on. But there's good news, Anna. Can I share the good news?
Please, please.
Yeah, so I know that sounds scary, right? All that stuff. But here's the good news. Those of us who have been vaccinated, the three vaccines that we have in the United States currently, we're protected against this thing. Coming out of the United Kingdom, the public health authority there says the people who are fully vaccinated with the Pfizer vaccine are protected in the somewhere in the 90% range, maybe up to 95%. I mean, that's fantastic, right? Those are the numbers that we've been talking about with the other variants. So even if it turns out it's a little less effective, we're still protected against getting very sick should we contract this virus. So this, of course, leads to today Dr. Copen's message to the not yet vaccinated out there. Please get vaccinated. Let's get vaccinated now before this Delta variant is around in a big way. You do not want to get this, and you can be protected fully if you get vaccinated. So please get vaccinated.
Already getting questions for you. Let me throw this one at you, Dr. Copen. 847 asks, is it safe for a vaccinated person to swim in a public pool with unvaccinated children, a senior or anybody else? If you're vaccinated, is it okay to go ahead and jump in? I guess the city pools are opening June 25th, but a lot of other pools already open.
Assuming a person, and particularly a senior, does not have one of the immunocompromised states, it should be okay. You're particularly if the pool is outdoors. So we've already spoken, over the last several weeks about being outside, how that itself totally decreases the risk of getting infected. There have not been problems of people being in pools, even crowded pools, having super spreader events. And then add on to that, if somebody has the protection of the vaccine, they should be fine being in a pool, even with kids.
Mm-hmm. That's good to know, because those are the kinds of things people be thinking about now as we go back to that, too. It's full capacity of pools, too, because it's everywhere, right? Doesn't that apply to everything, I think, just about?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, I haven't heard that there's an order out there to continue occupancy limitations on swimming pools.
Okay, something else I definitely want to ask you about. This is really interesting. I wonder what you make of this, that there is now an alarm or some type of COVID device they believe will be very effective in smelling if someone has the infection, that they could just mount it on the ceiling or someplace as people pass through or even over a room, and it would pick up the odor, this specific odor of somebody who has COVID within 15 minutes. Do we believe this is going to work? This is happening?
Yeah, it sounds like late night TV infomercial
right.
stuff, right?
Totally
yeah,
does.
Yeah. So what this is about, there are different infections and actually different diseases that human beings can get where our bodies give off different types of chemicals, and some of these chemicals actually have a scent to them. The scent is usually not something that can be detected by a human being. But, our listeners might have seen a couple of weeks ago, there was a report that there have been dogs that have been trained to pick up, to identify COVID-infected people. Now, how could a dog do that? Well, it turns out there's certain types of dogs that can pick up on one of these chemicals that COVID-infected people are producing. That's interesting, isn't it? That they're in nature, there's such a thing. And then this company, I believe it was in Britain, actually has developed a technology that will pick up on the same kind of chemicals to be able to say whether somebody is COVID infected or not. The truth is, Anna, I'm not sure what the use case will be for this, even if they prove that it works. I don't know where we're going to use it and in what kind of situation and what exactly that's going to do for us. But, let's see. I mean, these guys out there, these people who are working on inventing different kinds of detectors and different kinds of measures to help us better deal not only with this pandemic, but the possibility of future pandemics, that's only for the good, even if in the end it turns out we don't use something like that.
But couldn't you use it in an office place? Wouldn't it be good to know once we return to meetings again and things like that, or in a hospital waiting room or something like that, within 15 minutes there's somebody there? I mean, I don't know. It seems...
It's hard for me, even in an office setting, I'm not quite sure what we do with this. Mm-hmm. Even if it were to pick up on some of this chemical in the air, by no means does that mean that there's necessarily a significant amount of virus in the air that would get somebody infected, and that's what we would be trying to prevent. So it'll be interesting. Once they do their testing, let's see what their use case is, and then we can better assess it then.
Okay. Yeah, we have talked on the show with Steve Dale, our pet expert, about the dogs able to do this sort of thing. And it was pretty remarkable to see some of the case studies on that of the dogs and how highly effective they were. And they were using them, I know, outside stadiums in Miami just as a trial basis to see if the stadiums might use them, too. Again, what do you do? Someone's fully paid for a ticket to go see a Cubs game, and then the dog starts barking next to you. Do you pull them out of line and yank their ticket? I don't know. Maybe you do. But it is interesting.
Exactly. It's always, Anna, it's always with anything, even a dog or any kind of technology, it always comes down to what's the use case? What's the value of something like this? And what are we going to do with it? So it's kind of fun to think about it. My feeling always is we got to go slow. We got to be very cautious with these kinds of things. Because what is it that we're trying to accomplish? I think in the end, that's really the question.
Yeah, I hear you there. Hey, got to ask you about this one thing. I know a lot of people are sharing this story today because it seems sort of concerning. People are wearing makeup again now that the masks are dropped, and this study about how makeup may contain potentially toxic chemicals. They're saying that they looked at the biggest, you know, name brands in makeup, and that they found these PFAS were in a lot of them. Mascaras, long-wearing stuff, anything that says long-wearing or lasting, waterproof, all that kind of stuff particularly seemed to score very high on this list. I know we've heard of these PFAS in nonstick cookware before and fabrics and things like that. Is this a concern for you if people are putting this on their face? What do you make of that study?
Yeah, so I haven't had a chance to dive in as deeply as I would like into the study that just got published. Okay. The Environmental Protection Agency, the EPA, has been keeping an eye on these PFAS of various kinds. These are man-made chemicals that are used in all kinds of stuff, things like Teflon, nonstick components of various kinds, makeup, like you said, there's food packaging. It's in a lot of things. Some of these can be toxic, and there's a thought that it actually can lead to human disease, to the point that there's certain types of PFAS that have been banned, and chemical manufacturers have agreed not to make them any longer. So whether this latest report is onto something or not, I think it's going to take some time. We really need to hear back from the manufacturers, you know, what their response is. And I know they haven't responded yet. So we're going to want to see what that is. But keeping an eye on the different kinds of chemicals that are used in all the substances that we use in life is a really important aspect of what both FDA does, the Food and Drug Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency, and other government agencies. It's important that they keep an eye on this stuff for us. I would say right now, if somebody were to be concerned about this, and I don't think we have to sound the alarm yet, it seems that the makeups that are long-wearing, that last longer, have a higher amount of these PFAS in them. So if somebody were to be concerned, the suggestion right now, well, as we gather more information, would be avoid those long-wearing makeup products.
Okay, I hear you on that, and I appreciate that you didn't have a chance to do a deep dive because we did sort of spring that on you when it just started to trend, and so maybe it's something we revisit on another day, Dr. Copen, and see if there's any more reason for concern.
Yeah, Anna, this will be a good one for us to keep our eye on. I think we all can learn a lot together about the way these kinds of concerns work their way through a scientific process, the manufacturers, the various government agencies. It really is very interesting and obviously very important.
Totally. Well, I hope to see you at Wrigley at some point soon, now that we're all getting out and about a lot more. And I'll even buy you a beer, Dr. Copen, if you promise to toss it into the beer cup snake, effort, if that works for you.
That's a deal. I'll happily volunteer my empty beer cup, but as I said, I doubt I'll participate in the beer snake itself.
No, that would not look good. I totally understand that. Thank you, Dr. Copen. It's good talking to you, okay?
All right, thanks for the time. Have a great day. Bye-bye.